This episode of the Vision Board Podcast is brought to you by Onnit. Why Onnit, you ask? Well, here's a word from Onnit's founder and CEO, Aubrey Marcus.
You know, Onnit is the company that has the tools to improve your performance. And in whatever area that you're looking for, we have something to do it. You know, it's like going to it's the Home Depot of house repair, but instead of house repair, it's body and mind repair. You know, and it's body and mind performance enhancement. It's going to that body shop and figuring out what tools that you can apply to help make your life better.
At the Vision Board Podcast, we only promote supplements that we use ourselves, and we only use the best. To give you insights, here's Johnny.
Yeah, guys, my two favorite that I take, one, Alpha Brain. Alpha Brain really helps improve mental focus and memory, and the second one I really swear by is Shroom Tech. Shroom Tech is designed to help your body with energy and cardiovascular endurance. What's your favorite, Tristan?
Johnny, the two that I love is the Warrior Buffalo Bars. I find these delicious snacks, and they're also perfect for when I'm on the road and also on the run. Also, I love the Dolce Whey. They're grass-fed whey protein isolate, perfect for my smoothies and also my post-workout shakes. Now, guys, check out the range at www.onnit.com, and please use code word VISIONBOARD for 10% off at checkout. Now, guys, enjoy the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, today is the first day of the rest of your life. And now, listen in as Tristan and Johnny bring it all to the table on the Vision Board Podcast.
Guys, welcome back. Episode 126 of the Vision Board Podcast. I'm Tristan Cannell. Alongside me, Johnny Stofko.
What's up, Tristan? What's up, everybody? 126, bring it to the table.
We got Tim Sykes.
Yeah, Timothy Sykes, penny trader, philanthropist, American, doing big things, man.
Yeah, I'm really stoked to get him on. You know, myself being in finance, my background being in finance, being in trading. So it's going to be interesting to see just how he does his things. And I followed him for quite a while. First saw him on Wall Street Warriors, which was a reality TV show back in the day. And he's got quite a strong personality. So I see him on Instagram with his Lamborghini. So it's going to be an interesting chat.
Yeah, we really want to bring to you guys, though, to show a different dynamic of, you know, the insights of what a trader is, and not to mention a very successful one who's become a millionaire off of it, but also a different side to him, and you know how he doesn't allow the money to really, you know, resonate or defy who he is as a person and as a man, because he's really doing good things, giving back and building schools in less fortunate parts of the world.
Yeah, who is Tim Sykes? It's gonna be a great question, guys. Thanks for tuning into the show. Really appreciate all the 5-star reviews you've been leaving on iTunes. Just remember, you can subscribe to the show via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. And realistically, yeah, get in touch. Feedback is always awesome. So info@thevisionboardpodcast.com or hit both of us on our social media channels.
Yeah, couldn't say it better, man. Support the show. We'll keep bringing it, you know, and let's just keep moving this thing forward.
Okay, well, let's get to it straight away, guys. Here's our special guest, Tim Sykes. It makes me wanna creep. I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul. I got something for your mind, your body, and your soul. All right, guys, our special guest is Tim Sykes. Tim is an entrepreneur and penny stock expert, trader, and advocate. He turned $12,000 into $4.4 million and now teaches students around the world. He's been featured on CNN, Fox News, CNBC, and has also been a speaker at Harvard University. We welcome Tim Sykes. Tim, my man, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Tim, thanks for stopping by the Vision Board. You're a dude that Tristan and I have wanted to speak to since we started this. Could we start the show off with sharing a little insight on how you got drawn initially into trading?
So I'm Jewish and I'm naturally greedy. I like money. So I was always trying to figure out how to make money. At first, I was a tennis player. I kind of overtrained because Jews aren't meant to be professional athletes, as you know, any professional sports player will tell you. So I got injured. I got a badass scar. So I had surgery on my arms. And this was senior year of high school. My parents gave me control of my bar mitzvah gift money, roughly $12,000. And they said, here, go to work. Have fun in the stock market. They thought that I would lose it all. They thought that it would be a good lesson. And instead, I turned the $12,000 senior year of high school into over $100,000. And then by the end of freshman year, it was nearly $1 million. So I got the greedy bug. And, you know, I've just been taking it ever since. But lately, I've been a bad Jew. I've been giving money back to charities, but you know, you evolve. So I guess I'm just kind of like Jew-ish. I'm not like a full Jew anymore.
Yeah, it's something that we want to get into, you know, your work with the charities and the schools. But something I was interested in initially, when you were at Tulane, you were majoring in philosophy?
So, you know, I've always been interested in business and finance. You know, I didn't think that paying $30,000, $40,000 a year for college to learn something I was already doing on my own was very good. I took one philosophy class. It blew my mind. It made me think differently. So I changed my major from business and finance to philosophy. And that allowed me to, you know, really think outside the box. And that's really led to my, you know, continued success.
Yeah. How'd you find it, the pressure of going from 12,000, you're making money now, that when you first tasted that money, how much pressure did you have on you?
I mean, I never had any pressure. This whole thing has been a gift. It's a journey. I'm kind of like, you know, Forrest Gump. I just take it one step at a time. I don't really know what's going on most of the time. I'm just a kid from a small town in Connecticut. So every single day is just a blessing. And, you know, I've gotten cocky at times where I'm like, I can do no wrong. And I bet bigger. And sometimes I make more money, but I also lose bigger. Now that I'm a teacher, I'm much safer. I take much fewer risks. And my percent returns have gone down. But I like showing people how to make, you know, six figures a year. And I travel all over the place. I've been to over 100 countries. So I could probably make more and put more pressure on myself if I wanted to be, you know, like this Wall Street douchebag, you know, addicted to cocaine and Red Bulls and having like three mistresses and, you know, dealing with kids like legitimate and illegitimate, like most New Yorkers. But I don't want that. I live kind of a basic life and I travel and I love it. So there's no pressure at all.
Tim, when we were off air before we started, Tristan, I was asking Tristan about the mindset of a trader. He traded for 10 plus years.
Yeah, 12 years.
12 years. And we talked, you know, my background, psychology and sports. We talked to a lot of athletes, writers, entrepreneurs. What would you, when you're trading, like if you could take yourself back to like the heat or the pinnacle of, you know, when you were growing it from 12 grand to multi-million dollar levels, what would you, could you compare that mindset to any other maybe career or any other profession?
Yeah, I mean, trading is kind of weird. Like it goes in spurts, you know, like a lot of these other professions, like you see, you know, very, I guess, consistent improvement, like in your game, if you're in another sport. With trading, the hardest thing about trading is that you have to wait for the best plays. So the harder you try, that doesn't mean the better you'll do. And that's very counterintuitive and very frustrating for a lot of people. But there are high points and low points. And I'll tell you my first high point when I made $100,000 in a day as a freshman in college. You know, I could barely drink. I had three fake IDs taken away from me. I was skinny as shit. I had no girls. I was downloading illegal movies in Merck, and I made $100,000 in a day for my dorm room. And it wasn't luck. It was the same strategy that I had been using, you know, for the past year, but I just bet bigger and I had bigger rewards. So for trading, it's about, you know, trying to be prepared for that one great setup. And a lot of it, you know, it's just sitting on your hands, and it's very tough to do because, you know, most other tasks and most other industries, you know, you want to keep working and working and working. It's kind of like golf, I guess, where, you know, the harder you swing, if you've ever played golf, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a better player. Yeah. You have to learn to, you know, make small movements with your body, and it's not about power all the time. So it's about learning how to develop that kind of counterintuitive patience, which is the key to my success in trading. I was having a shitty week this whole week, not making any good trades. The past 2 days, I was kind of forcing some trades, and then I was like, all right, I'm done trading. This is crap. I'm going to go review my DVDs this weekend. And then the perfect setup came just like 2 hours ago. I nailed it. I made $6,000 in 20 minutes. I left another $15,000 on the table, so I didn't time it perfectly. But it felt amazing to really, you know, just like knock the cover off the ball. So it's about waiting for those great moments and being prepared. And you have to do a lot of preparation to recognize what is a great trade versus what is not.
Yeah. Just thinking on trading, Tim, I just want to always ask you, why did you choose penny stocks to niche down into?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't choose penny stocks. They chose me. I don't think anybody ever grows up like as a little kid and is like, oh, I want to be a penny stock trader. I want to be the fucking Wolf of Wall Street. Like, you know, I just made money on it. And I always have done well. I've tried other strategies. I've never really done well. I'm better suited at this, and it's a very limited game. Like it's a tough lesson for me to trade this kind of tiny niche, because I'm never going to make like $1 billion like some traders in Forex do. You know, it's a much more scalable industry. But for me, because penny stocks are so unscalable, and because, frankly, because of Wall Street Warriors, I was featured on that TV show. A lot of people ask me, you know, how do you turn a few thousand into a few million? So I recognize that there was a really big opportunity. Even though the whole world hates on penny stocks, they're really good for people with small accounts. So I don't just trade them. I teach them, and I'm very proud. I eventually embraced what I was good at, and now I have, you know, 2 decades of experience, so I can't waste that.
And Tim, could you elaborate to our listeners at home what penny stocks are, in the comparison you made with Forex trading, maybe the differences, and what type of, if there is a specific demographic that gets drawn into trading penny stocks?
Sure. So pretty much all traders are degenerate gamblers. You know, if you ever look in your town and you go to like the off-track betting and you see like these junkies like betting on horses or dog races, that's pretty much all traders. It's just in various forms. Forex is all respectable, even though it's a joke because 90% of traders lose. Forex, you're betting on currencies, like what is the U.S. dollar going to do versus the British pound versus the Japanese yen. And it moves quite substantially because you're using leverage. A lot of people like to bet, you know, if they have $10,000 in their account, with Forex, you can bet $100,000. So even small moves in the currency can make great moves in your account. With penny stocks, these are stocks trading under $5 a share. It's like the complete opposite of giant currencies. You're trading these crappy little stocks. If you've ever seen the movie Wolf of Wall Street, most of these things are scams. They have one or two products. They're being pumped. They're being manipulated. But what I've learned is that, you know, you can tell there are a few good companies and a few bad companies. Not all penny stocks are scams. And what's even better, you can actually make money when the scams drop, which is how I made not my first million, but my second million. And what I've primarily been known for is betting against penny stocks. You can bet on failure. So if most companies fail, if most traders fail, why not bet on failure? That was my realization. And I'm pretty good at betting on failure. I'm kind of a cynical guy.
Yeah. Tim, do you trade anything else?
I don't trade anything else. I trade, you know, weights. Like my stomach goes up and down depending on how much food I eat. So I'm like Jonah Hill in that sense, but I don't trade anything other than penny stocks anymore. I've tried all different strategies.
Yeah.
I never had continued success. You know, in the first 4 months of the year 2000, I made nearly $750,000 with penny stocks. The last 8 months, I was trying different niches and I lost $10,000. So you have to embrace what you're good at.
Did working for an institution ever interest you at all?
No. You know, the institutions with penny stocks are all boiler rooms that pump and dump. I like to expose them. So they like to send me cease and desist letters, and we get in fights. I don't do well with authority or cease and desist letters. I've gotten in some legal issues with a few celebrities who have pumped and dumped penny stocks, and they asked me kindly to take down my blog post, and I reply kindly, go fuck yourself. And I don't take down the blog post, and then the stock crashes, and then I write a blog post talking about how I told you so, you dumb fucking celebrities.
Yeah, on that note, that was my next question about the pump and dump, and one of the blogs specifically about one of these celebrities putting all the effort and energy towards a certain, I guess, and this is coming from a guy, my perspective, I don't know anything about it, so I'm asking you to explain to our listeners once again what that scenario is. Are these celebrities purposely putting this energy out there to trick the populace? Are they trying to make a buck? And what's going on there?
So the celebrities are just as dumb as the degenerate gamblers. You know, they have a whole team of handlers. They just invest in products. So, you know, one of their handlers will show them a product and say, hey, you know, you want to own 10% of this company? Oh, I like the product. Make a few, you know, YouTube videos, tweet it out, and, you know, you'll make the company get exposure. So celebrities do this. They don't understand the financials. They don't understand that even if the product is good, the stock can be bad. You know, there was a famous NBA basketball player who's like the biggest basketball player to ever live. And he sent me a cease and desist letter because he was promoting this like little Splenda wannabe sugar kind of thing. But the Splenda, you know, the product itself was fine. It was a real product. But the company was actually paying grocery stores to stock their product. why would a company pay grocery stores just to sell their product? You know, that's a money-losing proposition. And it's because the company doesn't give a shit about the actual product. The product with most penny stocks is the stock. So they got all these grocery stores to stock their product in order to put out a press release saying, look, this grocery store is, you know, having our product. When in fact, if you actually dig through the legal filings, and every company is required to post these legal filings, these SEC filings, which most people don't want to read through because they're 50, 60 pages, The company admits we are paying this grocery store in the hope that people will love our product so much and sales will take off. And they never do. These companies have no cash, they have no hope, and they lure in stupid celebrities who are financially naive. And they're, you know, the celebrities aren't evil, they're just dumb. And so I've told several celebrities to watch my DVD guides. And as you can tell, I'm a very nice guy. So I say it very nicely. And they, you know, nicely decline. So I, you know, just expose every celebrity pumping up.
Yeah. Tim, what's your strategy? Is it very charting? Because obviously with penny stocks, you're not going to really look at a lot of fundamentals, as you just kind of mentioned then. What's your strategy there, man?
Yeah, there's no fundamentals. You know, these companies have hardly any revenues or, you know, cash at all. A lot of it is charting. I look for the same patterns. You know, it's kind of like pattern recognition. So this pattern that I made $6,000 on today, I mean, I've made 30, 40 video lessons on this one pattern. And it's just a question of waiting for that pattern when, you know, if you want to get technical, it's when this stock that has been running for several weeks crashes 40, 50% within an hour. This happens often with penny stocks because they're, you know, kind of thinly traded. So you just wait for the big crash. You wait for when there's going to be some support, and then you try to dip buy. You have to be quick because it bounced 80% all within 1 hour.
Yeah.
But I was prepared. My watch list, which I send out the night before every night, specifically alerted people to, like, if this stock crashes, be ready to buy the bounce. And that's exactly what I did. And, you know, I didn't time it perfectly. It's not an exact science. The stock bounced 80%. I took 20%. So I often play it safely and exit too soon, but you know, I came away with a $6,000 profit, and, you know, that's what I do.
You just mentioned timing, and it seems like with trading, timing is pretty much a very key component, whether you're winning or losing. We're around the same age, mid-30s. Could you talk about the evolution of technology, social media, the ability to contact or connect with things or people, whether that's hurting or helping, you know, trading, specifically your brand, how much that benefited you?
Yeah, I mean, I really am Forrest Gump. Things just happen to me that are good, and I don't plan on it. Lieutenant Dion. And, you know, it's pretty amazing how social media has evolved, and I'm able to show and I'm able to teach. You know, so I make live video lessons of, like, what I'm doing. You can see my screen. I give live webinars. And also, right when I began teaching, there was a website called Covestor, which has since changed business models. But back in 2007, 2008, when I began teaching, they used to rank different traders. And they would tap into your brokerage account and verify your trades. And you could see how good you were. And I became the number one ranked trader out of 60,000 plus traders. So that allowed me to show, wait a minute, like, I'm not a one-hit wonder. I can actually do this and show it. And my strategy is replicable. And now with social media, I have several millionaire students. They help me teach. They give live webinars to my challenge students too. But they're showing all their trades live on social media too. So you can see the transparency. And, you know, this would not have been possible. You know, Wolf of Wall Street was before social media.
Yeah.
And now you can do a lot more research. Any single person watching this, you don't have to get scammed. All you have to do is Google about whatever company is being pitched to you. You know, there's still companies that are being pitched, not necessarily by the Wolf of Wall Street, but by, like, little mini Wolves of Wall Street. And they promote bullshit, and all you have to do is use Google. I mean, do like a street view of any company headquarters. I've exposed companies' penny stocks based out of, like, Barnes. If you do, like, the Google view, and, you know, some of these companies are based out of, like, these one-bedroom apartments. You know, the corporate telephone number is, like, some guy's cell phone. So all this information on the internet allows you to be a lot more sophisticated. You just have to dig. Most people don't want to do that. They like thinking of penny stocks as like a lotto ticket, like, oh, the stock's only at a dollar. Let me buy 1,000 shares. Maybe it'll be the next Microsoft. And it never is.
Tim, you talked about taking a little bit of money off the table now at 20%. How much has your risk profile changed between Tim, you know, mid-30s towards Tim when he's just playing with his bar mitzvah money, man?
Yeah, I mean, I used to have such big losses. I was such a fucking idiot when the first like 5 years, and then I was a cocky idiot like the next 5 years, and now, you know, 18 years into this journey, I've become really safe. My number one rule is cut losses quickly because I've seen so much shit, so I know I could be wrong in any stock. So when I do have losses, you know, even though I've had a sloppy week this week, for example, my losses are like $200, $300, $400. And so this $6,000 profit I just had wipes away all my small losses. Yeah. So it's key to always have small losses because you're going to be wrong sometimes. And I don't want to let a small loss turn into a potentially big disaster. That used to be the old me where, you know, sometimes I would just let it slide. I would double up. I would triple up. And my ego needed to be right. So now I've taken my ego totally out of this. It doesn't matter if I lose, as long as I lose small. And yeah. Some losses are unavoidable. You know, sometimes unexpected news happens. Sometimes the pattern doesn't play out the right way. And you roll with it and you move on to the next.
Having such success early, you know, the transitioning from high school to college, really being a teenager, it seems to me that is there a specific like path to take as a trader? For instance, are there guys when you were just making your name in the industry who had been doing it for years had to be giving you shit, right? Because like, you didn't go that traditional route of like whether it's education or experience needed to make a splash. You kind of just went for it. Talk a little bit about that and where that mindset came from, being so young and having the confidence in what you were doing and the ability to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, I there's no better analogy than Forrest Gump. I was running and I had no idea what I was doing. I'm trying to make you guys laugh. You guys are a tough audience.
I love Forrest Gump. And our laughs are so loud. Over 100 episodes of him and I laughing, we've had to tone it down. Yeah, but
okay.
Yeah, I get quoted back and forth, brother.
I spoke in Russia one time and I made a lot of like Russian communist comrade jokes and no one was laughing. And this is like very similar.
Oh, no.
I'm actually liking your stand up. I was going to ask next if you actually do some stand up.
Yeah, for sure.
I should do stand-up. If I wasn't a stock trader, I'd be a food critic comedian. but no, you know, I definitely went my own way. I didn't plan any of this. You know, I would never have chosen to be a teacher. I would never have chosen penny stocks. I just take it step by step. And yeah, a lot of guys have given me shit over the years. But, you know, I try and do the best I can. I try to be honest. You know, penny stocks, not the most up and up industry. So I'm trying to bring honesty and transparency. Even when I make a mistake, I don't hide my losses. I write a whole fucking blog post about it. And that seems to be, you know, kind of like this new approach on Wall Street. Most people on Wall Street are afraid to admit mistakes. If you look up, and this isn't just with penny stocks, if you look up a lot of startup founders, you know, they're going crazy on social media and they try to get all their friends behind their latest startup. And then 2 or 3 years later, you never hear about the startup and you have no idea what happened because they didn't talk about how their startup went totally fucking bust. And they're embarrassed. And that's a shame because most startups fail. Most traders fail. Most small businesses, you know, fail. There's a lot of failure out there. And everyone thinks that, like, they're being, you know, strong by not talking about it. And I think that if we start to really utilize social media in just a brutal, honest way, we can change a lot of the bullshit that happens. Like, there doesn't have to be this much failure if we can share our mistakes and losses and learn from it. So, like I said earlier, I was totally self-taught. And even though I made a lot of money, I made so many stupid mistakes because I didn't have anybody guiding me. So now my job every day is to be the mentor to people that I never had. So I highlight all my mistakes. And if anybody gives me shit, that's good. It makes me stronger. You know, it's good to have a social media following. I don't want to make dumb mistakes. I don't want to look like a fucking idiot.
What's up, guys? Be sure to pick up your free copy of Conversations with Champions. This is our free ebook, which is comprised of inspirational quotes from past guests that we've had on the show.
Get inspirational quotes from champions such as Evander Holyfield, Jonathan Thurston, Grant Cardone, Gary Vee, Larry Holmes, Mario Andretti, Anthony Mundine, Joe DeFranco, and many, many more.
To pick up your free copy now, just simply go to our website, www.divisionboardpodcast.com/ebook. Put your name and email in the slot. It takes about 10 seconds, and we'll send you the book directly to your inbox. Now back to the show.
So Forrest Gump being probably one of my favorite soundtracks, the double CD. What was your favorite? You had to pull us in. What was your favorite song on the double soundtrack? 1994, I think.
you know, I live the movie. I don't have a soundtrack. I'm not fucking Robert Zemeckis. Like, I don't care about the actual stuff. I really am going from place to place. Like, randomly, you know, I was on Steve Harvey. Randomly, I'm getting interviewed by Larry King. I just go with it, and yeah. Nothing surprises me at this point, and I love it. It's like a, you know, adventure.
Yeah. Tim, just to touch back on when you were talking about failure and making mistakes, when you do actually put it out there that you have made a loss on something, what's that actual process like? Do you go back and say, I should have entered the stock there? Do you actually do a bit of an analysis, or you just completely move on?
No, it's a thorough analysis. You know, first of all, am I following my rules? Am I following a good pattern? Because now I have, you know, a dozen DVDs that go over all my favorite patterns. Was I following that? Was it the mistake that I didn't follow my patterns, or was it a pattern and it just didn't go as expected? What didn't go as expected? Was there news? How did I react to that unexpected news? Like the other day, I lost a little over $5,000 and there was unexpected news. It was a pattern that works. It was very good trade for me, but there's unexpected news, which can happen at any time. So I wrote a whole blog post, 7 lessons from my biggest loss in the past year. And that's really it. I've really clamped down on my losses. So $5,000 is my worst loss in a year, which is pretty good. And I've had, you know, gains that are bigger, but I write the blog post. I did like a 30-minute video lesson. The stock actually worked out over the next 3 days. So I was on the right track. And I talk about that because it's not just about how I necessarily do on the trade, but was I even on the right track? Like, is the pattern no longer valid? So I have to analyze everything and see what I did right and what I did wrong. And what it came down to on this latest loss, you know, I just got unlucky, which happens sometimes. But I've had bigger losses in the past. I had a $500,000 loss several years ago that turned me into an alcoholic for a few years, and that fucking sucked. Yeah. And I got away from my pattern. I got away from my rules. I didn't have any rules in place at that time. So the big losses, while they suck, they help mold you and they help teach you what not to do. So even though I was very angry at my big losses early on in my career, I'm very grateful because now I know what, you know, to avoid.
Yeah, Gary Vee talks about now managing those micro losses, macro gains sort of thing. We were chatting with a guy, he's a consultant, he makes guys millionaires in startups, consulting, out of New York City. And I asked him a question about the mistakes in terms of creating businesses, common mistakes that he sees. And he was able to identify one specific one. He says in startups, a lot of people try to do what the top dog is doing, and they never get to where they want to go because lack of authenticity. You being an expert in that field, the 10,000-hour rule sort of thing, what common mistakes are you seeing with young traders maybe coming up that it just maybe you're looking at it just saying if you could just eliminate that, you'd be able to evolve quicker?
Yeah, I mean, for sure, people get discouraged by losses because, you know, they want to be a profitable trader. They don't want to be part of the 90%. So if they lose like $50 or $100 and I say, good job, that's a good small loss. You did good. You were, you know, safe. And they're like, what are you talking about? I lost money. So they get distracted by small gains or, you know, big gains or small losses all the time. And you have to really try to think about, no matter what industry you're in, and this is not just for traders, but it's about what is your 5 or 10 year plan. If you make or lose $50 in trading, I don't care how poor you are, that's not going to affect you over 5 or 10 years. And maybe you learned a good lesson in the process. It's kind of like a market tuition. So obviously you want the least market tuition because you don't want to learn, you know, from a big loss. But sometimes you need that big loss to really help you understand you don't want that pain again. So don't do that. Like, you know, if there's a baby and a baby is thirsty and, you know, the baby doesn't know the difference between steaming hot water or cold water, it's a baby. It's a stupid baby. But if the baby drinks the steaming hot water, burns the lips, the baby is never going to drink the steaming hot water again, okay? Because you've got physical pain. So traders, it's very similar. Not necessarily physical pain, but financial pain helps you learn. And you can't get discouraged by small losses. They help mold you. They help develop you. And you have to look at it like, okay, don't trade with money that you can't afford to lose. Like, don't trade with like rent money or food money, because then you're like, oh my God, I got to make a trade. I got to pay for rent next month. Otherwise, I'm homeless. If you try that mentality, you start forcing trades and you do bad. For me, the best trades are when I let the trades come to me. And I think of myself as a retired trader. So I only want to get back in to the market. I want to come out of retirement, even though I'm not a retired trader. That's just my mentality. Right. But I come out of retirement to take a trade that I would feel guilty about missing. And having that mentality gives me the patience to wait for the best trades. So you need to learn patience. You need to learn to cut losses quickly. And you need to really just understand that this is a process and that you cannot cheat your way to success. And this applies to every industry. You can't be successful without making mistakes, okay? You can't just have like this perfect road to success. Yeah. Even when I turned the 12,000 into nearly 2 million when I first started in college, I would have so many stupid losses along the way. And I learned. But the key is staying in the game and completing the journey. Too many people get discouraged by early mistakes or early losses, and they're like, oh, I quit. And that's the worst thing you can do, because then the loss wins. The mistake wins, because now you're cutting your education short and you're not really seeing what you can do. So too many people give up way too soon. I have a lot of students who find success in like their 10th month or 12th month. My top student has now turned 1,500 into 4 million in 5 years. But he was not even consistently profitable for the first 9 months. So everybody wants success right away. You can't have it. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. Tim, have you ever had a mentor?
No, I've never had a mentor, and I wish I did. So again, every day my goal is to be the mentor to people that I wish I had had.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, was that transition from being by yourself as just a trader to then coaching people, how was that transition?
Well, I mean, I'm just talking into a laptop pretty much every day, so there's like little spit bubbles all over my laptop. I don't even know if anybody's really listening. I might just be talking to myself, and this is all like, you guys might be imaginary people, and this is some fucked up vision.
That's dope.
I've been looking at this laptop for several hours today. I don't know if you're real. No, I mean, I just try to throw out stuff that I think is useful, and I try to put myself in the position of like a new trader. Most traders just want hot picks. They're like, I'll study later. Just give me a hot pick so I can make some money. Then I'll believe that you're real. I'm like, I don't fucking care if you think I'm real. If you have any doubts, don't learn from me, because this is a process that's going to take time. And if you have doubts, as tough as it is for me to create millionaires from scratch, it's fucking impossible if you're going to question me every single step of the way. So it's kind of cool to be real in an industry full of scams. I only get to choose the students that I work with. And when I do that, I expect them to follow instructions. So then I'm just trying to be the best, you know, kind of drill sergeant. I'm not necessarily the nicest teacher. I'm not going to teach them that they're, you know, rainbows and fucking unicorns in the stock market. This is a battlefield, and I have to kind of prepare them for battle. Otherwise, they'll get slaughtered.
If we were talking to a fighter, they would tell us their end goal would be to get that belt. You know, a writer would say they'd want to get their book, you know, published or become a bestseller. It's a question I asked Tristan. I'm going to ask you, for a trader, what is that end product or what is that achievement? Is it ever enough? Is it a dollar sign? Is it an object? And what is that for you?
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, it was obviously money, but that kind of gets old after a while. You know, I know a few billionaires. They're fucked in the head. I would never want to be a billionaire. They have so many people using them and they're like aliens. They can't even exist anymore because they're just so removed from society. So I only have, you know, a few million dollars in the bank, but now I have a charity with a few million dollars in the bank. So if I ever get too rich, I'm just going to give it away. I think that over time you learn that money is not everything. And all of my millionaire students agree, you know, they live kind of humbly. It's nice to have freedom. Like I have a millionaire student, his name is Michael Good, and he doesn't have many luxuries, but he likes buying houses in his spare time. And he has the money to do that. My top student, Tim Grittani, moved down to the Caribbean. He could do that. So freedom is really what I think most of my top students and I cherish the most. And I love traveling, you know, 112 countries visited now. It's going to keep going. So you find what you love, and it might not be what you thought you would initially. Like I thought that I would love, you know, I had a big mansion. It fucking sucked. I was in Japan trying to enjoy my sushi and like a giant air conditioning coil broke and flooded my living room. And I'm like, I just want to eat my sushi. I don't want to deal with this. Like, I'm not good with giant mansions. I'm not good on – I was just on a yacht the other day. I was taking like Dramamine like every 20 minutes. I suck on big yachts. So a lot of the expensive stuff in the world doesn't necessarily make you happy. Yeah. And now for me, it's not just about trading profits. Sometimes I take a trade where I just buy like 1,000 shares. I'm not going to make or lose more than a few hundred dollars, but I make a video lesson about it because my students have very small accounts. So now it's about how many millionaires can I create and how can I be, you know, kind of like the best teacher, not necessarily trading profits. And I also donate all my trading profits. So you find what you love and you evolve. So I'm frankly very happy to be a teacher and a trader. I would lose my mind more than I already have if I was just a trader and I see all these fucking flickering green and red lights all day and there's no real meaning behind it. There's no fulfillment. Money gets old very quickly. I know it's nice and it's a luxury, but at the same time, it's not going to make you happy.
Yeah. We're really interested in your charity work, actually, Tim, your foundation, Pencils of Promise. Tell the audience a little bit about that, man.
Yeah.
Pop the shirt on.
Pencils of Promise.
So Pencils of Promise is a charity that I work with. They've now built 400 schools worldwide in third world countries. I have my Timothy Sykes Foundation. I have my own charity. But I donate to a bunch of different charities. Pencils of Promise is my favorite. I just donated $1 million for my charity to them to build over 20 schools. And the cool thing about them is that they don't just build the schools. They also help operate them. They help optimize the teachers. And we're also buying e-readers so that the kids can learn better. And I really have merged, you know, my love of travel, my love of education and charity into this one thing. So I actually go visit like the school openings. I just went to Cambodia for my school opening. 1,000 kids greeted me. Yeah. There's kind of some crazy videos where I'm just giving all the kids high fives. Yeah. Now, you know, education is so key in these third world countries. They have no hope for their future. Like if they had no schooling, if they had no buildings, they're learning like in the grass. If it's raining, school's canceled. You know, the families aren't going to pay for schooling because they can barely afford to live. So this kind of creates this cycle of poverty where these kids have to take these menial jobs and just to support the family all their lives, and they can never break out of that cycle. Education is the key. So Pencils of Promise, Cambodian Village Fund, the Bali Children's Project. I have now 35 schools built or in development, and we actually just started a Tim Sykes soccer stadium in Cambodia too. It's going to be the biggest soccer stadium in Cambodia. And we're only – this is my kind of crazy idea. I think they think I'm kidding, but I only want to allow kids who get A's to play. It's going to be like Revenge of the Nerds Stadium, and all the jocks are going to have to play in the fucking grass field. All the nerds who can't even play for shit are going to have this beautiful stadium. So we're going to try to reverse, you know, a bunch of stuff. This is my test case. I don't know if it's going to work, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Tim, it's very important, too. And these schools, you mentioned the videos you have on your Facebook of the Cambodia, Laos. It, as an educator, because on paper, you know, you see your body of work when Tristan introduced you. The education part, the philanthropy part, giving back to these young people who pretty much would never have the opportunity to learn if you wouldn't have stepped in and have done that. Talk about that. Were teachers big in your life? Was it in your family? Was this something that you've always wanted to do as a young boy, impact people by the masses?
Yeah, no. If you had asked me 10, 15 years ago, you would be donating millions of dollars and building schools, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here. I'm going to go drive my, you know, Lamborghini that I've always been dreaming of. But I have the Lamborghini. I have the Ferrari. It's fun. But I never, you know, again, I'm not from like a teaching background. I have no mentors. But because I've had such a hard time, you know, not a hard time, but a struggle learning without any organized education, I understand the value of education. And, you know, that's what I want for more people. It's ridiculous how undervalued education is worldwide. And I'm not going to be able to solve all the problems, but I can, you know, try to help, and I can try to put in my two cents because I see where education has got me. And now that I also teach, I see where it's gotten my several millionaire students and several upcoming millionaire students who now have freedom and now they're loving life. You know, 75% of people under the age of 30 hate their jobs, and they spend 75% of their life at their jobs. So pretty much you have 3/4 of the world just fucking hating life the vast majority of the time, and it sucks. Mm. And they can get rid of that if they study, if they use these new tools. So the internet, these little e-readers that Pencils of Promise are using, this can help speed up education, but we really have to promote it more. And that's why I share it all, you know, on social media. Several of my followers also donate to the charities. These charities can always use more exposure. It's crazy that, you know, if I have a picture of my Lamborghini or a picture of the school that I opened, you know, the Lamborghini gets like 10 times the number of likes, because that's what people like. We're in this whole fucking Kardashian brainwashed, you know, value world.
Yeah, consumer.
And it's all about the bling. And eventually I'd like it to overtake it. But I understand. I told this to Larry King. Like, I show off the Lamborghini to get people motivated to study. But none of my millionaire students care about that stuff. Like, once you learn enough to actually make enough to, you know, kind of buy your freedom, you have different values. But in the beginning, the Lamborghini helps motivate you. And it's good to have motivation, whatever it is. I had a comment the other day. This guy commented and he said he felt guilty that he was inspired by my Lamborghini. He was like, I'm ashamed to admit it, but your Lamborghini inspires me. And I'm like, dude, whatever works for you. Like, don't feel bad that, you know, this Lamborghini inspires you to study. Use what works. And if it's a Lambo, that's fantastic. Get the Lambo. You'll have it. You'll see that it's fun, but you'll also get sick of it. And then you're on to your next challenge. And for me, it's about finding fulfillment, which the charity world has given me.
Yeah. What's the best way for people to continue to support your cause with Pencils of Promise there, Tim?
So I have, you know, pretty much one DVD called How to Make Millions. If you go to howtomakemillions.com, it all goes to charity. I've now sold several thousand copies of this. It's a 35-hour guide. It's everything that I know. It was supposed to be 20 hours, but then I'm kind of a perfectionist. So I made it 24 and 26, and I'm like, fuck it. I just need to explain everything I've learned. So it's 35 hours, but wow, it's my best reviewed DVD. I don't make a dime from it. It took me nearly a year to do, and it all goes to charity. So go to howtomakemillions.com and check it out.
Cool. Tim, in terms of your day, are you a very structured or unstructured person?
You make me laugh.
See, I finally got you to laugh, eh?
I have no structure whatsoever. I'm fucking, look at this bed. This is where I'm working from. Look at my three phones right here. Okay? this is what I do. This is my lack of structure. I literally work in bed with a laptop and three phones. It depends on what time zone I'm in. Right now I'm in Miami. Tomorrow I'm going to LA. A week from now I'll be in Tokyo. So it's all around the stock market hours. And I have crazy different things, you know, depending on whether I'm meeting with charities or opening a new school or hanging out with students or eating at the best restaurants or hanging out with my family. Every day is different, and I love it.
Yeah, you mentioned the photo you have on your Facebook of the yacht. There's six places for dinner. You said the table has been set. Could you share insight on what that is? Is that a mastermind? Is that, you know, we talked to a guy named Yannick Silver, the whole Maverick 1000 mastermind group. Could you share insight? Because I'm intrigued by the yacht and the empty seats.
Yeah, so, well, that wasn't a mastermind. I do masterminds, but not on yachts with bad Wi-Fi. Usually masterminds are done on land with good service so that we can trade live and we can learn. This was just actually a 10-year anniversary trip with several of my top students who have been with me for pretty much the whole time, Tim Grittani, Tim Bowen, Michael Good and their wives. And so I was just treating them. I like to do student trips every now and then. They don't pay a dime. And I just treat them because, frankly, they helped me teach. I used to give like 5 webinars a week. I would lose my voice. Now several of my top students also give webinars. So I do 1 webinar a week. So this was a celebration. And I also surprised 2 of the students with schools in their name. So I'll post photos of that soon. None of my social media is real time anymore. It's usually a few days behind just with what happened with the Kardashians. And when you go to some of these countries, you have to be careful. This watch is, you know, more than most people have in these countries. I could be killed for it. So I don't want that.
Yeah. Tim, just sticking on being unstructured, and obviously you're on the go a lot. You know, your personality is very, very big. In terms of you trying to get some Tim time, some kind of downtime, what are you doing?
What is this word downtime?
Like,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I think there's a language.
You don't speak Spanish.
Wait, hold on. No habla down. Is it din time?
It's a soft D. No. It's a soft D. own time.
Hold on. One of these phones will have it. What is it? Down.
Siri will tell you.
Fucking funny.
No, I mean, again, I have found something that I truly love in teaching and giving back. I mix everything. Like, you know, I invite friends on trips. I work with my parents. So, you know, even like during my mom's birthday, I remember we're having dinner at Per Se, like the most expensive restaurant in New York City. Mm. And my dad and I are fighting about some stupid business thing. And my mom is crying. She's like, it's my birthday. Why are you guys doing this? And we just, you know, there's no clear lines. And even if there are, we're just, you know, we break them. So business and teaching and charity, I took my parents to Laos a few weeks ago.
Yep.
That was their first time in Asia. They both got sick. Some people can't handle Asia. They're never coming to another third world country again.
Yeah.
So sometimes I make mistakes, but, you know, we just go with it. I have such a crazy life and schedule. I just try and, you know, make it all work. And I probably should use some organization, but I'm having fun on the no plan plan.
With the webinars, Tim, it's I coach, I teach as well. I want to ask you firsthand some advice for me. When you're doing the webinars, do you have a structure? Do you have a certain amount of length you go? Is it one topic? Is it one bullet point? Are you putting it on all socials, just your email list? Could you share a little bit of insight on that sort of process?
Yeah. So every other week, so 1 week I do a Q&A webinar for my challenge students from like 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern. So it's 2 hours.
So you are live?
Next week
all live. Okay.
All live. And then I also, the next week I do a 2 hour, sometimes 3 hour live trading webinar from like 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern or 9 to 12 so they can see my screen and they can see me trading. Sometimes I do a live trade. If there's no great live trade, sometimes a live trading one becomes a Q&A. You know, there's usually themes that are happening in the market. So I write down a few bullets that I want to talk about. Like if I see a lot of students not cutting losses, or if I see, you know, the marijuana stocks are hot, so I want to explain which stocks I'm watching and why, which stock is better than another one. But I have all the structured DVDs. I encourage everybody to watch the guides ahead of time. That's kind of like the foundation, because the stock market, especially the penny stock market, moves very fast. So with these webinars, you know, sometimes I'm answering a question and I have to stop mid-sentence and I'm like, this stock is breaking out. I got to focus. So, you know, the times are set, but the way that it unravels and reveals itself, it's always interesting. And sometimes I just get grumpy when people don't ask me good questions because they haven't been watching the DVDs. So I just start swearing at them and I start telling people to like smack themselves in their head like 50 times. Maybe that'll make them smarter. And it's not their fault. They've had bad parents and bad teachers, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
Has webinars been a big part of your sales strategy, Tim?
Yeah. You know, I mean, we have students can choose their level of commitment. Some people are working full time or at school, so they can't necessarily attend live. So we have all the webinars archived.
Yep.
But some people do like learning live. Also, when I don't do a webinar, sometimes I just record my screen and I do a video on a live trade, and then I post that live trade after the fact so you can see my commentary during it. So sometimes when I'm trading live during a webinar and I'm trying to answer questions, I'm trying to trade, multitasking usually screws me up. You know, I try my best just to show my whole process, and whether they tune into the webinars or the DVDs or the video lessons, I also do a nightly watch list. I send out between 10 and 20 pieces of commentary. Like I might buy this stock. I'm going to avoid this stock. I'm worried about the overall market.
Yep.
All during the day. We have 1,000 traders in the chat room. So it's just a nonstop learning environment, and I fucking love it.
Okay. Do you want to hear personality
round?
Yeah,
let's do it, man.
All right. We've got personality round, Tim. It's 4 questions structured for all our guests. So Johnny's got the first one, man.
All right, Tim Sykes. Let's talk about you having an awful day, the shittiest day you could think of. For our listeners at home, some young coaches, could you give some advice when you're having those shitty days that helps you get through that?
Yeah. I mean, back several years ago, before I really got safer in cutting losses, I would have some big losses. And, you know, you do all this research, you put in all this time and effort into this trade, you're like, this is it. And then it goes against you. And I had no rules and I had no way to, you know, monitor my risk. So I would deal with that by drinking heavily. And then I would be usually drooling either on the left side. No, sometimes on the right side. It depends on, you know, which way I'm like tilting. But I would be very drunk. And I would consort with very bad people when I was drunk. And I would stay up till all hours of the day, and then I would wake up the next morning hungover as shit, and then I would vow never to do that again. And over time, I've gotten better. I can't drink for shit. That's just my genetics anymore. But also, I've really managed to cut down on my losses. So anybody, no matter what industry you're in, when you have a bad day or you make mistakes, you learn from that kind of like emotional education. You never want that feeling again. So you learn not to do that. So if you're a trader, don't bet big. Don't bet everything. You never want to risk disaster. If you're, I don't know, an athlete, you know, don't do drugs. You're not going to be able to perform the next day. If you're a musician, you know, maybe drugs help you. I don't know. It's totally different depending on your industry, but you learn how to do the best that you can and focus on what you love. You know, it never ends well if you're doing a job for somebody else. Like if you're focusing on a job that your parents want you to have or somebody else, you know, wants you to have, and you're just really not into it. Maybe your job pays you good money and you're afraid to really embark on, you know, your career as you really wanted, as like a poet or something, which pays nothing. I find that the world is so amazing and big, no matter what you love, no matter what you want to become an expert in, you'll find a way to make a lot of money, whether it's creating a website or an app that solves a key problem in that industry, or writing a great book, or teaching, or, you know, becoming somebody amazing in that industry. Focus on what you love, and really everything takes care of itself that way.
Yeah, Tim. Okay, next question. I'm going to take you back to your childhood, man. What posters did you have on your wall? What posters did you have on your wall growing up, my man?
I had a Ferrari and a Lamborghini, and now I have both of them. So now on my walls, I don't know if you can see it, I've got charity checks.
Wow.
I've got big-ass charity checks.
Yeah.
Grand Vision, boy, man. So
that's dope.
Could you see that?
Yeah, man. That's awesome. We asked that question, too. You still –
This is like a $50,000 check. This is $10,000. And so I like I like motivation on my walls, and I look at that. So before it was the cars. Now I have the cars in my garage. They're not that inspiring anymore except for people on social media. Charity is what really motivates me because I want to donate more.
Hell yeah.
All right. I would normally ask a friend's question in this scenario, but having you on, I got to ask something a little more personal about philosophy because I love philosophy. And my two favorite philosophers has really helped me, Terrence McKenna and Alan Watts. And some of the mental notes you've been giving us kind of fall in that line of like find what you love and follow that. Joseph Campbell, you know, if you're falling, dive. Could you share with us some of your maybe philosophers growing up and maybe some guys or girls that you read or, you know, some insight into that?
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of ancient philosophers, Aristotle and Plato. You know, the allegory of the cave. Have you heard of that?
No, could you elaborate?
All right. So this is my version. This is a very rusty retelling. But basically, picture these people stuck in this cave. Their heads are chained to the wall. They can only see straight ahead all their lives in this hypothetical example. And they see like shadows on the wall of the cave. There's some imaginary light or, you know, fire. So they see other people, other things moving on the wall, but they don't know what it is. They've never looked to the left or the right. So all they can see is straight ahead. They see what's on the wall in front of them, and it's just shadows. They think that is what reality is because they've never seen anything else. Now, in this, you know, allegory, imagine one of these guys breaks free. His head is free. He gets out. He's trying to free the others, but he can't. So he walks out of the cave. He goes outside, he looks into the light, the sun is hurting his eyes. He's never seen this. He has no idea what this is. And he's like, guys, he tries to tell them, like, guys, you're just looking at fucking shadows on the wall. Like, there's nothing there. I'm sure Aristotle and Plato didn't swear. But, you know, you're looking at this and you think this is reality. This is not reality. You're just seeing one version. And he tries to unchain them, tries to tell them, and they think he's crazy. They say, no, this is what life is. You're crazy. And they banish him. And he's banished from the cave and he's going outside. And this is kind of like the life of a philosopher king, where he sees something that other people don't see. It's a lonely role because you're trying to get other people to see it, but no one believes you. But you have to try your best to tell them the reality that you know, when you know that they're wrong, especially. So this has really kind of shaped me, where the whole world hates on penny stocks. And here I am being like, penny stocks are great. And so every single day, I mean, I have 4,500 plus video lessons now. Every single day I make a video lesson. Here's another play. Here's another play. Even when I lose, even when I'm wrong, it adds to the journey. It adds to kind of like this, you know, huge, I guess, documentary effort that I'm making. I'm trying to catalog why I think this niche is so great and misunderstood, and the patterns and, you know, certain things that keep repeating again and again. And, you know, that's really my life, and I love it.
Yeah, it's interesting. Thank you. Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Okay, Tim, final question. You're going to be hosting a private dinner party, and you got 5 invites. Only rules is no family or friends, but it can be anyone dead or alive. Who are you inviting?
Anybody dead or alive. I would probably say Plato and Aristotle, because, you know, they wouldn't eat much because they're, you know, dead. and I would just eat all their food. But then it would also be cool to listen to their stories. I wouldn't invite anybody fat because then they would eat all my food. What are we having for this dinner party? Does it matter or no?
Well, you're cooking, man, so.
Whatever you want.
Fuck that. I want a multi-course tasting menu from Nobu Matsuhisa. I don't know. I guess I would go with Jesse Livermore is one of the greatest traders of all time, except he uses too much leverage and commits suicide. So that would be cool to learn from him and smack him in the head and be like, you know, everyone looks up to you and you fucking bet too big, you fucking asshole. Mm-hmm. I would like to do that to Jesse, even though he's one of my heroes. So Plato, Aristotle, Jesse Livermore. I guess I would have to go with, you know, probably like George Washington, just because he's such a leader, and I feel like I could learn so much from him, and an innovator. And then my fifth person, I guess, would be Steve Jobs, because he was an innovator. And, you know, I wouldn't choose anybody really, you know, living, because then I probably could just go talk to them. You know, I've got a lot of money. I've got a lot of connections. But dead people, bringing them back? I like where your head's at.
Tim, you've been a pleasure, man. Somebody we wanted to speak to for a while. Thank you for sharing this space. Could you leave our fans with where they could stay in contact and continue to follow your journey?
Sure. If you just go to TimothySykes.com or look for Timothy Sykes on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Snapchat, I'm everywhere. And, you know, if you want to learn from me, that's cool. If you think I'm full of BS, that's cool too. I have 800 plus free videos on YouTube. Watch those. I'll accept your apology later.
Awesome, man.
Tim, thank you so much for your time today, man. You've been brilliant. Like I said, get that stand-up happening, man. You're funny, dude.
For sure.
No time for stand-up. I'm trying to do a little bit more. I could do stand-up. I do like making people laugh, but when you need to teach something, I think it would be selfish of me to ignore like 20 years of experience and just be like, no, I'm keeping that information to myself. I know a lot of people who have made a lot of money and they're like that. They don't want to share. And I think that's a huge waste. I think that everybody, and this is my final thought for your audience, share and learn what you've experienced, you know, ups and downs. And I think that if we do that more and stop being so scared, you know, of what people will think of us, like, oh, I need to edit this story to put myself in like the best possible light. You don't need to do that. Just be honest. Like, I built my business just being honest, and I'm not the best trader in the world, but I've made millions, and I've made millionaires from scratch. Honesty is always the best, and in this era of social media, transparency is going to play a much bigger role. Just watch. You're not going to be able to fake it. All you fucking fake-ass internet marketers, you're dinosaurs.
Yeah,
man. You don't even know.
Dude, when I hate the fake it till you make it thing. We were just talking about that. We love that you brought that up, Tim Sykes, man. Appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks. Good stuff.
See you later, brother.
Pencil the promise, too. Build schools all around the world. You guys should build a school. It's only like 50 grand per school. It's like the best 50 grand you'll ever spend, especially if you go there and you meet these kids and you start changing the world. You know, they built 400 schools, but we need like 400,000 schools, so we're 1/1,000th of the way there.
Yeah, man.
Yeah,
for sure,
man. We'll definitely put all those details on the show notes as well so people get involved, buddy.
Cool, guys. Thank
all right, guys.
All right, Tim. Thanks, man.
Have a great weekend, buddy.
Cheers.
Bye.
Yeah.
And guys, that was Tim Sykes.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed it like we did, man. Like we said in the beginning, he definitely has multiple levels to his success, and a lot of that has to do with helping people out and giving a lot away.
Yeah, his stories through Asia has been brilliant. I'm sure that we'll touch a little bit more on that on the Friday wrap-up show. So be sure to check out the Friday wrap-up show on Friday. Any day it can come out.
It could come out on another day. Days. Maybe you just call it Friday. Release Friday. On a Monday. I don't know. We make the rules.
Wednesday, we've got Pete Evans coming up. Pete, if I'm pretty sure every person in Australia knows who Pete Evans is for our American and other countries that listen to us. Pete is an international celebrity chef. Mm. He's got he's a host of pretty much our highest rating cooking show in Australia, which is called My Kitchen Rules.
Yeah, similar to Gordon Ramsay, similar to Wolfgang Puck. He's worked side by side with those guys. He's also worked done work with Oprah, doing great things in that space of wellness, health, lifestyle sort of thing. But yeah, definitely going to bring a different element to the show.
Yeah, he's a paleo guy, but that's not where we want to go with this interview. But
paleo.
you know, hyper successful. So I think he's going to bring a lot of value to the table. So make sure you check out Pete on Wednesday.
Yeah, we're stoked to bring it. I love how paleo has become a word. Like, it's a bad word. It is. But yeah, tune into Pete Evans, man. Continue to stay tuned into us.
For sure. Guys, we'll check you on Wednesday.
Peace.
Welcome to the Vision Board Podcast, stories of success from around the world.
You guys are scratching a niche, and that's why this podcast has become popular and successful, is because you guys are scratching an itch. You're enjoying it, and you're also benefiting from the knowledge that people are dropping.
I've never met the person in my life, including my parents, that was able to outwill me about me.
Whatever profession you're in, you need to keep working harder. You know, nothing comes easy these days, and you know, you'll get knocked down, but get back up, that counts, so just keep working hard at it.
You know, you guys said you do stuff, you ask things that aren't Googleable. You guys are two for two.
There's never been a time in my life where anybody ever was able to tell me who I was more than I knew who I was.
To join our vision and follow the journey, please subscribe to the Vision Board Podcast via iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher.